aim of our Living with Diabetes podcasts is to share information and inspire, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. DRWF will not be held liable or responsible for failure to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who's familiar with your situation. Views, information or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent opinions, standards or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them.
Hello and welcome to the latest podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in this edition we're looking at the impact of DRWF's research funding in stimulating vital early development of new treatments and therapies. We've been talking to researchers who've gone on to win major funding under the Grand Challenge, a project funded by a £50 million donation from the Steve Morgan Foundation aimed at improving the lives of people with type 1 diabetes.
Hello, my name is Vicky Salem. I'm a consultant diabetologist. I run a clinic for people with type 1 diabetes at St Mary's Hospital at Paddington. I also have a different hat on. I'm a clinician scientist, and about 80% of my time is dedicated to diabetes research. I run a lab interested in beta cell research and now regenerative medicine for type 1 diabetes at Imperial College London.
My name is Dr. James Cantley. I'm a biomedical research scientist and I'm based at the University of Dundee. My core research focus has been on the insulin producing pancreatic beta cell, which is a really important cell type in the body that controls levels of sugar in the bloodstream.
My name's Sarah Richardson and I'm an associate professor in cellular biomedicine based at the University of Exeter. The fellowship was actually focused on the role of enteroviruses in type 1 diabetes.
Dr. Vicky Salem is a consultant diabetologist and a clinical scientist. She also sits on DRWF's Research Advisory Board, which gives her a huge insight into the importance of the charity's work to support a wide range of new projects.
I was so pleased, really honoured to be invited to be a member of that board. It's got a wonderful reputation. There are an incredible number of really distinguished people from the UK diabetes field sitting on that board. So when I was asked to join, I was absolutely chuffed. And it's got a very special place in our heart because we know how passionate the charity is about raising money for the research that we do, but also about fundamentally engaging and helping people and their families with diabetes. And you know, it's a wonderful organization. It's an organization that's got a lot of soul, and so being part of that research steering group is really important because it helps us prioritize where we need to be focused. And I think all of us on that panel share a desire to really focus our energies on helping the next generation of researchers. So what we need to do is try to capture those brilliant young minds and try to steer them towards a career and a life dedicated to diabetes.
And that work is really important. Can you just talk a bit about why maybe a charity like DRWF, maybe not the biggest funder, but still very important in that field of diabetes research?
Yeah, so important. So not the biggest, but certainly has a big footprint. And, you know, we feel the presence both in the research community, but also, you know, people and their families with diabetes. You know, you reach out to people so well. And I think related to what I was saying earlier, you know, that ability that the DRWF has shown over the years to identify those really impactful projects, you know, be it supporting the Islet Isolation Unit in Oxford through to, you know, identifying those young researchers who we now are seeing turning into not just national but international superstars in the field of diabetes research. So I think the RWF should be proud of itself because it's managed to attract funding applications right across the remit of diabetes. I mean, diabetes is not one condition, as you know. There's type 1 and type 2, and even under those umbrellas, we're starting to understand the great deal of heterogeneity. And DRWF has funded studies all the way from, you know, very basic scientists understanding the root causes of these diseases through to developing clinical trials and, you know, supporting really big clinical units.
Vicky is one of three researchers who've been awarded a total of £5 million for work looking at the root causes of type 1, how to stop immune attack and treatments to replace or reverse insulin-making beta cells.
So this is an award that's been given to us via Diabetes UK and JDRF from the Stephen Morgan Foundation. It represents a huge injection of research funding into UK-based science towards a cure for type 1 diabetes, and this means absolutely the world to us. So people like myself who've dedicated our careers to not just treating people with diabetes but investigating causes and trying to find a cure desperately need funding to keep going. We're hugely passionate about what we do, but we can't do what we do without research funding. And it's a really competitive landscape out there. We're competing with people who are interested in other just as important diseases like cancer or heart disease. And arguably, diabetes often falls down the list of people's broader priorities, but that's not true for us. And so when we receive this opportunity to really focus on the best of UK infrastructure towards diabetes, it's really truly revolutionary. It can really be life-changing, both to us as the researchers and hopefully one day to our patients.
That's really good. And how important is research funding to the work that you do?
It's absolutely pivotal. So I'm partly paid by the NHS, obviously, because I do see patients still in clinic. But most of my salary comes to me via the university because I'm an academic. But I need funding to undertake the research that I do. So my research is based within the Department of Bioengineering. We're very collaborative by nature, so I'm working with people from a vast range of disciplines. People interested in stem cells, developing new beta cells, people working with biomaterials and chemists and material scientists working towards producing the scaffolds, vascular specialists helping us to create new blood vessels to support these stem cells, and me as a sort of clinician scientist in the middle of all of that trying to orchestrate it. We need the money to support our lab, to support the fantastic PhD students and postdocs who devote their time and their passion to actually performing the research. And, you know, we can't do it without the money that people like DRWF and others raise specifically towards research with a goal for helping people with diabetes.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. The two other researchers working on the Grand Challenge project have both received DRWF funding for their earlier work, which has provided valuable results on which their latest projects are based. Dr. James Cantley is a biomedical research scientist based at the University of Dundee. His research focus for the past 20 years has been on insulin-producing pancreatic beta cells. These control the levels of sugar in the bloodstream, and importantly, beta cell dysfunction and failure play a key role in both type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
The funding we received from DRWF was for an early stage project. It's obviously pump priming funding, and it was for a project where we were investigating the role of a gene which produces a protein called viperin, which at the time we hypothesised may play a role in beta cell dysfunction and destruction in type 1 diabetes. And what that funding really allowed us to do is to do some very early stage experiments and sort of test this hypothesis and to start to see if there's a role for viperin in beta cells that we could then pursue. And we can talk a bit more about this during the interview today, but the the funding really was absolutely critical in allowing us to sort of test this this idea. And I think the key output of that is that we found that fibrin, which is a gene which forms part of what we call the innate immune system. So that's the part of the immune system that's kind of pre-calibrated to respond to challenges such as infections. So fibrin forms part of the innate immune system, and it can respond extremely quickly to beta cell inflammation and stress. And what surprised us is the rapidity of that signal, and then how quickly it switches on. It also switches off very quickly. And what we found is that seemed to correlate with levels of beta cell death, a process we called apoptosis, but it's basically sort of coordinated beta cell death. And this then led to a bigger project, a bigger funding application to the Medical Research Council. And we now have that funding running in my lab. We're into the second year of that project. And we're now investigating the role of this gene more in greater depth. We're looking at the mechanisms controlled by this gene. And we're also looking at the role of this gene in a mouse model of type 1 diabetes, where we have real autoimmunity taking place. And I should just mention that, you know, everything we do in science is team-based. So, for example, with the Vibrant project, with the DRWF funding, it was a PhD student in my group called Nelissa Tebeka, very talented PhD student who did a lot of that early work with that funding. And more recently, with the MRC funding, we have a postdoc called Jackie Howie, who's driving that project forward in the lab. So it's great to be able to be working alongside you know, talented scientists to drive these projects forward.
So can you just tell us a bit more about the protein viperin and how it responds during inflammation?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got interested in this gene in beta cells when we spotted in some array data. So it's quite old data looking at the, you know, many genes that are present in beta cells and how they respond to viral infection or cytokine exposure. So I should just briefly mention that a cytokine is a kind of chemical signal often produced by the immune system or by cells in the body that triggers a response in another cell type. And in this case, we call them pro-inflammatory. So they're cytokines that trigger an inflammatory response in a cell type. And what we noticed in this array data that's already published by another group, Desio Ozirik's group in Brussels, is that this particular gene responded very strongly to cytokines and to viruses. So we decided to pursue that further. And we set up some beta cell models. So we have beta cells in a dish. They're live cells, but we can keep them in a dish so we can control what they are exposed to. And when we treated them with pro-inflammatory cytokines, this gene switches on very, very strongly and very, very quickly. And it's one of the, I think, cleanest and strongest gene signatures I've seen in a beta cell. So this gave us the idea that it's very closely tethered to what the signals that the immune system are sending to the beta cell. And may play a role in that very early pathogenic process in type 1 diabetes.
So what does the research tell us about inflammation in those insulin-producing pancreatic beta cells and the onset of type 1 diabetes?
So it gives us a lead to pursue, effectively. It tells us that this particular gene is potentially involved. And when I use the word potentially, obviously this, you know, the response is very dramatic, but we need to then work out what it's doing to those cells. And that's what our current research program is doing. We're looking at what other pathways and processes this is influencing in the beta cell. But I think, you know, looking more broadly, it basically suggests that this is one of the early responses that the beta cell has to signals from the immune system that are sort of driving this inflammation. So it's a new line of investigation in the field, and we're now pursuing this with our broader project.
Can you then elaborate on how much viperin people with type 1 diabetes have in their pancreas?
It's a really, really good question, and it's also quite hard to answer because it's very, very difficult to study the pancreas in people, and it's extremely difficult to study the pancreas in people, you know, the stages that precede clinical diagnosis of type 1 diabetes. Extremely challenging to get that kind of data. So what we've done is to set up cell models in the lab that we can kind of mimic that early inflammatory environment. We're currently working primarily with rodent cells, which share many features with people, but a few differences as well. And as the project progresses, we're looking at doing this work with human islets as well. And we have a collaboration with a group in Canada to do that. We're also, as part of this project, working with Sarah Richardson at Exeter, and we're looking at doing some other looking at sort of histological analysis of the human pancreas, particularly in early on in the disease. But it's not been easy, because it's actually very, very hard to study the protein in these kind of tissue sections. So we're having to look at other ways to measure the gene. For example, looking at the RNA that's produced. So RNA is the transcript of the gene that precedes generation of a protein. So looking at the protein was a bit technically difficult. So we're now looking to see if we can quantify that RNA signal to get a readout of what that gene's doing in people, in the pancreas of people with type 1 diabetes.
So this role played by viperin, can you just elaborate on the beta cell dysfunction and death?
Yeah, absolutely. We can see the two are linked. So we've conducted experiments where we will genetically alter the levels of this gene. So we can, for example, increase the levels of the gene or decrease the levels of the gene using cloning and molecular techniques in the lab. And in vitro, so in a dish, when we have our beta cells in a plastic dish in the lab, the levels of viperin seem to determine the levels of cell death, or to look at it the other way around, the levels of cell survival. And what we're now doing is to test this in genetically modified mice, where we can look during real autoimmunity in the beta cell and look at what levels of viperin do to that cell function and cell survival. But in terms of the actual, I think the crux of your question really is, what's the specific mechanism this is manipulating or controlling? We are still working on that at the moment in the lab, and we hope to have an answer to that in the next 2 years.
So looking back at your pump priming, what difference did that mean to you, and how has it helped your research since the award?
So I cannot articulate strongly enough how important these pump priming grants are. So particularly when you have a new project, a new question, a new idea, being able to apply and to get funding from, say, to the DRWF in this case, to get this sort of smaller pot of money to test the project, to see if there's something worth pursuing in there, it's absolutely vital for catalyzing new ideas, new thinking, and people trying new things, which is really important for as a research field, that we have this sort of fresh feed of ideas. So, the substantial funding for these kind of projects comes from, say, UK research councils, for example. But that funding is much bigger pots of money, much harder to get. You need lots of preliminary data. You need a really, really, clear, sort of stress-tested project. Whereas these pump priming grants are absolutely vital in testing new ideas and to driving people in the diabetes research field to come up with new ideas and to test them out. So, yeah, I cannot say strongly enough how important this funding is for driving the feed of new projects into the kind of research field in the UK.
And now you've got the Grand Challenge Award. What does that mean to you, and what do you hope to achieve with the project?
So, yes, I was really, thrilled to be awarded the Senior Research Fellowship from the Type 1 Diabetes Grand Challenge. And, of course, two other fellowships were awarded to Vicky Salem at Imperial and Sarah Richardson at the University of Exeter. And this award really has been transformational. As sort of modern research intensive academics, we have a lot of different tasks we have to focus on, a lot of different things we have to do. But these type of research fellowships enable us to really focus on driving forward a very clear research question and program. So in my group, we have, I guess, three interests really. We want to know how beta cells work, the kind of nuts and bolts underlying normal beta cell function, to provide a roadmap of how beta cells function during health. We want to understand how beta cells fail and become dysfunctional in diabetes, and that really relates to the the Vibram project we've been discussing so far. And then the third arm is to try and come up with new ways to restore or regenerate beta cell function. And that's kind of what we're doing with the type 1 diabetes grand challenge funding. So we're undertaking an ambitious drug discovery project with two different arms to test two different ways to potentially regenerate beta cells in type 1 diabetes, using a combination of a cell and preclinical models to do that. So it's made a big difference to our research program. It's enabled us to grow the team, to develop our technical capabilities, and to really focus on pushing this project forward. And of course, this has wider benefits as well within the lab, within the university, and more broadly in the UK, in that it's helping us, it's you know, developing protocols, models, techniques, thinking, ideas that can cross-fertilize into other projects and to help move those along. And it's also got us collaborating a lot more as well. We're talking more within the research community and coming up with new collaborative ideas. So this has made a big difference to UK diabetes research, and I think we'll see a lot of development in this area over the next 5 years.
The research you're doing at the moment is very much looking at type 1 and the death of pancreatic beta cells. Does this play forward to looking at other forms of diabetes, type 2 maybe?
That's a very good question, Claire. The current focus for the Vibram project and for the beta cell regeneration project are looking at the profound loss of beta cells we see in type 1 diabetes. But particularly for beta cell regeneration, there is the potential to cross over into type 2 diabetes. So we know that something like a quarter of people with type 2 diabetes have a severe insulin deficiency. So that means they have a very, very poor level of insulin production from the beta cell. And they can even, present clinically like somebody with type 1 diabetes, so quite lean and very poor glucose control, but without the autoantibodies and the autoimmunity you see in type 1 diabetes. So I think when you're looking at restoring or regenerating beta cells, there's as a potential therapeutic approach, there is the possibility or a clear possibility to transfer that approach into people with type 2 that have a severe insulin deficiency. But this is something that will be tested in the future. There's ways that we could test if that translation could occur with different models.
The third researcher is Dr. Sarah Richardson, an associate professor in cellular biomedicine based at the University of Exeter. She received a DRWF non-clinical fellowship in 2010 to look at the role of enteroviruses in type 1 diabetes.
So what I was doing was using rare donor tissue to determine if we could find indicators of an enteroviral infection and evidence of a host response to that infection in the pancreas of individuals with and without type 1 diabetes. And working with rare pancreas bioresources from both the UK and the US, we were able to show that the presence of viral indicators and host responses were increased in individuals with diabetes when compared to those without. We also explored how and why pancreatic beta cells, the cells that make insulin, are so susceptible to infection with enteroviruses. And we were able to show in a subsequent work completed by my PhD student, S.A. Iffy, that beta cells contain a molecule that these viruses can use as a receptor to gain entry into the cell. This molecule is uniquely present within the insulin granule, which you can think of as a bag that contains the newly made insulin, which sits in the cell waiting for the rise in blood glucose before it's released. And we think that in people with a severe enteroviral infection, that the virus can actually get into the blood and get to the pancreas, and when the pancreas is beta cells release insulin, the virus sneaks inside those beta cells and starts its infectious cycle. Genetic studies have also suggested that people at higher risk of developing type 1 diabetes have alterations in several of the genes that help sense and respond to viral infections. and many people will be infected with these viruses throughout their lifetime. But we think whether you get type 1 diabetes will depend on when in your life the infection occurs and if the virus is able to get to the pancreas, which typically only happens during a severe infection, and if you have susceptibility to respond to the infection in a particular way. So we think the infection itself and the altered response to infection, which could result in persistent or low levels of virus in the tissue, is what's triggering and driving the immune response against beta cells.
So did you identify which particular enteroviral stereotypes are involved?
So this is actually a really challenging thing to do within the pancreas tissue. So we were not able to define specific serotypes, but we were able to narrow it down to a smaller group of these viruses. And subsequent studies emerging now have confirmed that these, using different techniques, and highlight that the Coxsackie B family members seem to be key contributors.
So has this research revealed whether viruses can trigger type 1 diabetes and demonstrated how they do this?
So the work that I completed in my fellowship cannot definitively show that enteroviruses trigger type 1 diabetes, as we're looking in the tissue that's been collected from individuals who already have diabetes. However, these studies and studies looking at living people who are at higher risk of developing type 1 diabetes have provided ever-increasing support that enteroviruses can play a role, and particularly those Coxsackie B viruses. So why does that matter? So if we're able to determine which types of enteroviruses are triggering type 1 diabetes, because these viruses are from the same family of viruses as polioviruses, we can make vaccines against them. And that's exactly what has happened in the years since my fellowship, where several dedicated teams from Finland and Sweden and others across the world have developed a multivalent Coxsackie B virus vaccine. A multivalent vaccine basically means it can target several Coxsackie B virus serotypes all at once. And the phase one safety trial for this has recently been completed with very promising results. The vaccine itself is owned by a company called Prevention Bio, who you may already be quite familiar with, that's just released teplizumab. And this company has recently been bought by Sanofi. And they are now in talks for this vaccine to go into phase two trials. And the hope here is that eventually that the vaccine could prevent potentially prevent the development of type 1 diabetes in susceptible individuals.
Would that be children or adults?
It would have to go through the safety trials so far have been done in adults, and it will in phase two trials be moved more into children. But enteroviruses are a family of very common viruses that most people will see one of these viruses very early in life. They circulate widely, and there are many different types, over about 100. And potentially, the hope might be that you would deliver the vaccine very early in life before the children get exposed to any of these viruses. So they're protected from the virus, and therefore are not going to get an infection that spreads to the pancreas that could trigger the disease in those individuals.
So looking at the type 1 challenge funding, what does this challenge funding award mean to you? And what do you hope to achieve with this latest project?
So I'm super grateful to the Steve Morgan Foundation for this Grand Challenge Award funding. And the most valuable outcome of this award for me is having the time and resources to continue building on our work, developing a better understanding of the disease processes in type 1 diabetes. And in the project, I'll be building on our previous work, as I said, that has helped to establish viruses as a potential trigger of the autoimmune attack, and on later work that was led by Dr. Pia Leet, who did a PhD in our group, and she was recently awarded one of the Diabetes UK R.D. Lawrence Fellowships. And what her work suggested was that there are different forms of type 1 diabetes that are potentially driven by different underlying disease mechanisms that we can see within the pancreas. And encouraging the observations that we see in the pancreas align extremely well with clinical observations, where we really know that not everybody's type 1 diabetes is the same. So building on those two aspects of the previous work, my fellowship will aim to improve our understanding of why type 1 diabetes is not the same in every individual. And we'll be exploring the possibility that during early life, as the pancreas grows, that there are windows of time where the beta cells are more susceptible to an autoimmune attack if it is triggered in those individuals, which could be, for example, by the viral infection.
You'll also be studying how beta cells can fight back against the immune attack. And what will this research help researchers to develop in the future?
So one of the ways we hope to be able to cure diabetes in the future is to generate cells that produce insulin that can be given to people with diabetes that essentially replace their beta cells with new ones. But one of the issues with this is that the immune system that will try to target these again when we put them back into individuals with type 1 diabetes. And what we've found in some subsequent work is there's evidence in the pancreas of individuals that keep their beta cells for longer periods after diagnosis, that these beta cells have markers suggesting that they're trying to defend themselves against an immune attack. And perhaps that's why their beta cells are retained for longer. So a further aim within the fellowship is to develop a better understanding of how beta cells could be protecting themselves from that immune attack. And this holds huge promise for improving the beta cells cell replacement strategies that we might use in the future.
So I know you've mentioned it already, but how important is this research funding to the work you're doing?
Without this funding that we get from the likes of DRWF, Diabetes UK and JDRF and the Steve Morgan Foundation, the work that we do would not be possible. We wouldn't be developing our better understanding of the disease, and therefore we cannot make better, more personalised, improved treatments for people with type 1 diabetes.
Fellow researchers James Cantley and Vicky Salem agree that the early support of DRWF has been vital.
Research funding is an absolute lifeline for what we do. And one of the great things about doing this type of research in the UK is that we have quite a diverse source of funding. So there are multiple diabetes charities, including the DRWF. There are multiple research councils and other major charities as well. So that research funding stream is absolutely vital for us to keep our labs running effectively within an open university academic research context.
You know, its support has covered the whole remit of diabetes and continues as well on the other side of things to provide an incredible support to patients and their families. We're starting to talk more and more now about the mental load of living with a condition that requires so much input day in, day out, so much of your bandwidth, and without people working for charities like DRWF, that's so much harder. So it's a wonderful umbrella organisation. You're small, but you pack a mighty punch, and I'm really, really proud to be associated with the charity. To anyone who's listening and therefore must be affiliated with DRWF in some way, thank you, from the bottom of our hearts for your support. We're so passionate about what we do, but we can't do it without your support. And thank you.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. Our thanks and congratulations to doctors Vicky Salem, James Cantley and Sarah Richardson. You can learn more about DRWF research projects on our website at drwf.org.uk. And don't miss our first ever national United Through Diabetes wellness event on Saturday the 16th of September in the Midlands to discover new skills, knowledge and tools to enhance your existing diabetes understanding. Learn about the very latest in diabetes care and management, question the experts, meet the researchers, make new friends in the diabetes community, and much more. We only ask for a small registration fee of £5 per person to attend the event. Your registration fee includes access to all the featured programmes, meet the researchers, the exhibition suite, all-day refreshments, a healthy hot and cold buffet lunch, delegate bag and free parking. You can find full details and register via our website, including special hotel rates for those who choose to stay overnight. To discover how you can continue to support DRWF, together with the latest fundraising events, news and information, it's all on our website at drwf.org.uk. This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Our thanks to everyone who's talked to us, and also to you for listening to this latest edition of our podcast, Living with Diabetes.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2023. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.